Okay, so we're presenting on Public Health 101, From Disease Prevention to Disaster Preparedness, which is the first public health curriculum for high school students in Connecticut. And then we have no relationships to disclose. So an overview, why teach public health in high school?
These are the three things that we're going to be covering today. Why should we teach public health in high school? We're going to go over the curriculum in 12 minutes, and then next steps.
Okay.
Yeah, go on.
Okay.
So, you know, basically, I think most of you are from undergraduate education or above, and one of the things that we look at when you start talking about, you know, why reach out to younger kids, when you look at the Institute of Medicine report that was produced in 2003, you know, they talk about what we need to keep the public healthy. And they said it's not just an educated workforce, you've got to start educating the public. And then they recommended to start teaching public health at the college level. But the problem with that is that a lot of people don't finish college. Only 30% go on to college directly after high school, and most of them are white. So we miss out when we start thinking about diversifying the workforce. We miss out when we start thinking about health equity and starting to really prepare students with 21st century skills and a knowledge of public health and how their health behaviors relate to the communities. 21st century skills, I don't think that there is a better avenue, better course to teach students this than public health. When you think in terms of communication, analytical, critical, and systems thinking, cultural competency, technology, and innovation, that's what they call 21st century skills. 17 schools now in the nation are requiring that students prove that they have 21st century skills as well as English, science, math, etc., in order to graduate. And you want to, and if you look at, you know, our public health competencies and 21st century skills and themes, they're one and the same. I, for one, I'm not too biased. I really think that we should be teaching public health instead of health education. Teach it through a different lens so that you're not shaking your finger at kids saying, you know, if you have sex, you're going to get AIDS, you know, which is the way that a lot of times health education is translated by some health educators. Our Public Health 101 course, it was developed by 21st Century Skills at Education Connection. Education Connection is one of six regional education service centers in Connecticut. And they actually do technical assistance for one of six regions in Connecticut. I developed it along with Colleen and another woman who has an MPH and is a health educator in Manchester. It meets both educational and public health goals. It's really beautiful. It's done online. It's called blended learning. And you have the whole course is online. They don't have a book. You go into a classroom with, it's a computer lab, actually, and there's a teacher facilitating it, but it's really student-oriented. And the kids work in teams to develop different projects and presentations. It's very career-oriented. We work with the Mentoring Organization Registry of CPHA, Connecticut Public Health Association, because experiential learning is a huge piece of this. We bring in professionals to make the curriculum come alive. In fact, when you read the blurb, it says that we had 9 units to begin with, and we decided, you know, we should really do 8 units and put careers, which was going to be the 9th unit, and integrate it into every single unit. We also integrate advocacy into every single unit.
So frameworks and resources, we based the curriculum on Riegelman's Public Health 101. It was the guidance for the units and the structure. And we chose that because the undergraduate courses in Connecticut are already using that. And we wanted to make sure that this would clearly articulate with the undergraduate program so students would have the potential to get credit at the college level and would have a good basis to feed them into the public health courses in the undergraduate level. We used a lot of online resources. We found that there was a plethora of award-winning curricula and lesson plans online that are free to use. So we decided not to reinvent the wheel, and we explored them and adapted some as needed. And then human resources. We had state experts from our mentoring organization, from Yale, from UConn, who helped us in developing the curriculum, who reviewed the units, and then also go into the classrooms and meet with students. So the mentoring organization registry, Cindy mentioned.
We have 32 members, and you'll see it on these handouts. If you didn't want to take time, you know, to go over that. But I do want to say that we have incredible resources up on our website, and you know, feel free to download them. We have an internship manual that's designed for the employer and has forms in there that uses public health competencies to do like a pretest and a post-test with a post-evaluation with the interns. And we have another source called Activities and Tools for Teaching Public Health. And there's a lot of the resources that we use in the curriculum are in that compendium. There's also a nice tool that we created for community college program last year, and that has actual career pathways. You know, what can you do with a two-year degree that can lead to a public health career?
So what does Public Health 101 look like? Right now, it's being implemented and piloted in a New Haven charter school with 21 students. The community is a high-poverty community. It's very diverse. There are very high rates of dropout from high school, teen pregnancy, and this is a charter school that is leading students into a career pathways. So they've all taken a health fundamentals career course before taking this, and this is an elective for them that they can take their junior or senior year of high school. There's a biology teacher who's been trained and is working on this with them, and then the classroom, as we talked about, is in a computer lab. There's no book. There's a lot of online activities. The students create blogs and videos, and
that's it. We're going to go fast. Those are the members. These are the units. It's what is public health, and again, this is based on loosely based on Riegelman's Public Health 101 book. Public health research. Health communication, social and behavioral health, disease prevention and control, global public health, environmental health and public health preparedness, and emerging issues.
So if anyone wants to access the course, we actually have a trial access available to anyone at the conference. You can use the guest login and password, and you can view some of the activities the students are doing, some of the coursework. So this is an example from Unit 1, What is Public Health, where we provide an overview of public health. We get into the social determinants of health and provide a basic background for what they're going to be learning. And this is just an example of a sample assignment where students went to this link down here, reviewed a timeline of achievements in public health in the 20th century, and then had group discussions and had to debate their answers on what was the greatest achievement. And then this is another activity that they did in the first unit, and this was, I thought, pretty telling. Very early on, they're learning things pertinent to their community, and that's one of the things that we focus on, is we want to make sure that students are understanding how public health impacts their local community, how it impacts, how social determinants of health as well impact their local community. So this student talked about breastfeeding and how she learned that it was important for healthier mothers and babies, and how breast milk is healthier than formula, et cetera.
They have a weekly public health blog that they have to do. We want them to come out of this course really being aware of what the issues are of the day and wanting them to read the paper and everything. And so they use these sources plus some others, and they have to write a blog about what they think is the most important issue of the week. They share that online, and then they present it at the end of each unit.
Okay, so Unit 2. In Unit 2, these are just some of the learning objectives that we expect the students to learn during the unit. We get into epidemiology, we get into biostatistics and evidence-based public health, so we're really providing a background for when they enter the college level, even the community college level in public health. Some Unit 2 activities, we have them view contagion, preferably after class or outside the classroom to not take away from their learning time. But we also encourage them to invite other friends into that so that they would be encouraged to take the class the following year. And the movie actually comes with a website with a lot of lesson plans and activities and teaching tools that can be used along with it, which we incorporate into this.
You know, the other thing that we have them use is there's a wonderful site called Gapminder, and Hans Rosling, who has done these TED Talks, does this fantastic 4-minute overview of how population and the environment has changed over time and how wealth and health are just related one-on-one, and it's highly engaging. So I hope that you'll look at that at some time, because we don't have time to do it now.
Unit 3, health communication. The students actually will develop their own health communication campaigns during this, and they just recently finished a project with the New Haven Health Department where they created videos on violence, domestic violence prevention, that are going to be used by the health department in some health messaging campaigns. So they're applying what they're learning, and also networking and with experts in the field and the local community. Unit 8, this is where we get into emerging issues in public health, and hopefully it's going to be an exciting unit for the students when they get to this at the end of the year. But we talk about climate change, aging, impacts of aging populations on their community, on ethical aspects of decision making in public, on emerging public health issues. We talk about water privatization, and the students get into debates on ethics of that. So we're applying all these different aspects of public health ethics as well into the curriculum.
And we hope they get to Unit 8, because this week I don't think they're going to school. So. But I'm really glad that we did the climate change thing, because New Haven's really getting hit today. So. But here are the sample activities. And again, in each, on the right, you see that you've got the careers being covered with the environmental health specialist and built environment specialist. We have, for a culminating activity, the students are going to be creating their own built environment to improve community health. So what are the challenges? I think that teachers are still asking, what is public health? So we still have education to do. The schedules, they have mandated schedules with courses that they have to finish. Funding is always an issue. The teachers need to be trained, because public health teachers don't typically teach at the high school level. Mm-hmm. We have to do coordination of mentors within the classroom, and there's a fee for online access for the course, although it's not that bad. And for kids that are very concerned about their AP credits and how that's going to transfer over, this is not going to be the course for them. The big opportunity we have is that there's a new law in Connecticut that is going to require every sixth grader to have experiential learning, and every 12th grader by the year 2020 to have a capstone. We have 166 school districts, and they're doing this at a different pace, but it's a good enough excuse that we'll try and get out there and convince them that public health is just the best way to do this. So next year there's going to be two more high schools that are going to be adopting this. We're working on articulating the curriculum and creating more trained mentors and teachers.
So all the panelists would join us on at the podium. You might have to bring an extra chair or two if you guys want to do that. While our presenters get organized, I wanted to bring your attention to next year in Boston, my own institution, Harvard School of Public Health, demonstrating actually in this 2 hours we have to talk about education, how much demand it is. We'll be hosting an all-day symposium on education. If you're interested in that, I'll leave the postcards. We can pick it up afterwards. Plenty of postcards, so no rush. And we'll be covering undergraduate education, graduate education, both at the master's level and doctoral level, and perhaps two of our presenters have admitted that we should talk about K-12 as well. But without further ado, we have 20 minutes or so for questions and comments. Go ahead.
I have a question for the groups that do that community-engaged or service-learning approach, and Dr. Paulino alluded to this, but I'm wondering about what kind of preparation went into it for students as far as talking about and acknowledging their power and privilege, maybe discussions around cultural humility, to ensure that they went into communities and without a, you know, sort of paternalistic, patronizing approach. It's a challenge that I'm pursuing for my own students.
So we addressed that issue both at the University of Texas, and Dr. Paulino addresses that issue at NEVE with the students. And in both cases, we're taking students out of ivory towers including the students that are already in the Dominican Republic, because Santo Domingo is a thriving metropolis, and the conditions there are drastically different from the conditions in Mbeke. And so both sets of students, even though they're coming from different cultures, they need to be talked to about what they're going to see and told what to anticipate, and then examine some of their own biases and prejudices. What we found, interestingly enough, in taking Texas students to the border between Haiti and the Dominican Republic, is that they can examine some of these border health issues where there's inequality from one side of the border to the other in a somewhat unfettered and unbiased manner, because you're not taking Texas students to look at, you know, Mexicans and colonias. You're taking Texas students who are looking at the dynamics between Haitians and Dominicans along that border. So, and it gives them a new set of lenses, if you will, to look at some very similar problems. But the other piece of it, the preparation is important, but even more so is the reflection. So when we take students, Dr. Paolino does this and we do it, we work together during the day. In the evening, we come back to our Children of the Nation headquarters, we have dinner together, and after dinner, there's mandatory reflection. Everybody talks, unless you're vomiting in your room, or you have malaria, or you have dengue or something, you get your excuse, but otherwise you're there. And everybody, we just sort of do popcorn, in other words, an idea pops, and that person speaks, and then that catalyzes discussion. And those are extraordinarily powerful learning sessions, because they're driven by the learners themselves. They're reacting to what they saw, and then they're bouncing their ideas off of their peers and off of their mentors.
That's why we have the session after lunch. Go ahead.
Just to say, before the individuals that's implementing the Public Health 101, that implemented the Public Health 101, I really want to commend you for implementing this course, because I have found over the years of being a public health professional myself that many of our students, I'm at a high school, Dr. Charles E. Brum Medical Arts High School in Camden, New Jersey, which was started by a physician. And I learned by just conducting like a focus group and a lot of the high school students have no idea what public health is. The Medical Arts High School is centered around focusing them on medical, becoming a doctor or nurse, radiology. But when it comes to public health, they think it's federal funded health centers. So I'm trying to integrate public health at the Medical Arts High School. The principal is very receptive of it, and I'm very interested in getting, because he said we have to have a curriculum. There we go.
Well, we work with education, and we really provided the content and, you know, the structure so it is able to be articulated. And putting it online has, you know, really been more of what they've done, work with them to put it online. So, you know, we were really doing the content piece of it. We were lucky in that there are eight schools already, and eight high schools in Connecticut that are doing the health career curriculum. And we also have AHEX around, and we find that at the Area Health Education Centers, they do a lot of public health, even though they don't call it public health. So we've actually worked with the AHEX, and I've done some training with them, and they're more aware now of what public health is, and they're more aware that they've been doing public health, you know, and so they talk more about public health.
And absolutely, and also I just want to make this last comment, that urban areas, is so much public health that is done, but it's just not realized, and we're talking about their issues, and what better way to educate them to focus on their issues and implement, and hopefully they will pursue education, higher education, in public health.
And just a note on that too, it's not just high school students who don't know what public health is, and we found this through the Connecticut Public Health Association. We have to educate teachers, principals, and also our legislators and policymakers in the state as well. So if you can connect with your state affiliate, they may have some resources too.
If I may ask a question to a number of folks who talked about their practice experience, I think one of the, you guys have demonstrated practice at its best, community engagement, cultural confidence, cultural humility. Sometimes as we have this growing efforts to place folks, there ends up being sort of this tourism effect. whether it is literally abroad or kind of a tourism into the community of the other. And for those who are doing stuff on practice work and everything else, maybe starting with you, Michael, could you speak a little bit more about how you take students, those who are privileged and those who are less privileged, and talk about engagement in the community?
Absolutely. Yeah, so there's a term coined called voluntourism.
Yep.
And we try to challenge that as directly as possible. And I guess one of the reasons why we developed this course is because we realized that we were only hitting a very small percentage of our students who are going on these kind of community engagement. They really desire it, and so they create it on their own if we don't provide them the capacity to do so. We take a very kind of direct yet as gentle as possible challenge to the way that medical missions have traditionally been framed, and we are not shy about inviting students to reflect on the fact that, as I said, there are some really selfish motivations and ways that local communities are really undermined by these short-term medical mission trips. And I think it is our ethical obligation to challenge that as directly yet appropriately as possible.
Others, whether it's classroom engagement or community engagement, want to respond to this issue or go back to the question?
I just want to offer the perspective that students come in the door to Global Health for a huge number of reasons, and some of them would be reasons that you and I might approve of and others that we might not approve of. But I think that rather than judging the student for their motivations, they're not trained, they're seeking knowledge. So maybe they don't know why they're attracted to something or what the right reasons are. But that's okay, it's exciting. And so we have an incredible teachable moment right now because there's such passion for global health amongst students at all levels. So let them come in to the course for whatever reason, and then we have some opportunities to do some teaching and get them discussing and reflecting and examining their motivation.
Myra, and then maybe Kathleen.
I was just going to add a little bit more information about us more at the local level. So through our center, we have a lot of internships where the students are actually going out into the community and practicing different research skills from data collection to providing interventions. But we work very closely also with a group of community health workers that we have hired through our center who come into our classes to really give the representation of the community that we have there in Long Beach specifically and the needs. And they're the ones who even tell us, no, don't do this, don't do that. And you know what's going to make more sense than what we may have felt, but they will come back and tell us, this doesn't make sense, this makes sense. And so we've worked closely with them and brought them into the classroom to help with the students and learning a little bit more about that population.
In my experience, so first, just a brief moment about WKU, my students are predominantly what I would describe as a traditional undergraduate population. Every single student in that class was under 23 years old. They had come right from high school through the class, so about 20,000 students, so a large state institution. And so my students come from a wide variety of economic backgrounds, probably academic backgrounds as well, but many of them, they've had a wide variety of experience with communities within Kentucky and Tennessee. And so the two things, though, interestingly, as far as revisions to their initial budget proposals, first, as I said, getting them to get their budget and their goals detailed enough, to me that demonstrated, again, the learning, their lack of experience, that you can't just infer something, that you need to state it. But the second thing was getting them to be clear that the problem was not to be their own, that their project was to come directly from that community member, and the community member needed to work with the students and the students with the community member to make it something that was sustainable. So we'd always say to them over and over, when you leave Western, you know, whatever you did, it needs to still be here. And so if it's something very small, then that's okay, because you've helped somebody. You know, the students would have wanting to change the world in a way that was not that was driven by them and not driven by the community needs. So learning experience at the undergraduate level.
We have one quick question and one quick answer.
I had a question for the ET room for your public health and medical students. Were they was this experience part of their capstone credit, part of their grad
matter of fact, the first group, this is a very preliminary assessment, all three of them were MD-MPH students. So we have a four-year MD-MPH degree, and all three of them used that as a capstone. And that group actually got published in a student journal for global health, which is out of Columbia University. That was all student authors, and it was none of the faculty. So, yes, they are.
Please join me in thanking you.